Welcome to our Saturday post-game simulcast. They're trick-or-treating in the neighborhoods of West Lafayette, but we're here to break down Purdue's 31-24 win over Illinois. Not necessarily a work of art, Tom Dienhart, but I want to first, before we get to you, thank our sponsor, and of course that is the Purdue Union Club Hotel. They'll have a game watch party when the Boilermakers are at home next, which will be the weekend of November 14th, at least if all goes to plan. And Tom, you know, again, a win is a win, and it's good to get a B2-0 for the first time since 2007. I thought, you know, again, Purdue left some things on the table, but had enough to get it done.
Yeah, work in progress, Al. But like you said, you got the W, which was key today for Purdue. Always nice to taste victory, right? 2-0, Purdue hasn't been on this perch very often, as you mentioned, Al. And you know what, for a while there, my friend, late in the third quarter, when it was 31-10, after the Marvin Grant and Jalen Graham combo on that defensive touchdown, this looked like it was going to be game over, right?
Yeah.
Laffer, Purdue's going to put it in cruise control, but of course the Illini rallied for a couple touchdowns. And of course, you know what, guys, the biggest play of the game probably was a non-scoring play, at least in my mind, with Purdue on the brink of maybe having to punt the ball back to Illinois to give them a chance to tie this game and maybe win it with a two-point conversion. Purdue faces 3rd-and-11, and Aiden O'Connell lofts that ball high into the sky, and David Bell comes down with it. Spectacular one-handed catch. Purdue gets the first down and is able to kill the clock. Game over. So, again, for 2 weeks in a row now, we've seen Purdue deliver in crunch time in tight situations, key stops or make key plays to seal victory, which has to be very encouraging for fans.
Yeah, Brian, you know, you watch this game, and it's easy to be critical because it really that score should have been 31-3 early on. And yet, give Illinois credit. Illinois playing with its four-string quarterback did some good things and did some good things defensively and gave itself a chance. I was concerned from a Purdue perspective that Purdue has to punt out of its own end zone, and Brooks Cormier did not exactly have a great game today. That would have been a problem. But, again, you get the win, and that's the important thing. But making some plays at the right time, also a part of that formula.
Yeah, flip the table over, get the hell out the door with the win, get to the buses and get home. That was sort of the second half there. This was starting to resemble the Nevada game last year, where you had a big lead, a bunch of stuff happened. It's really a hard game to interpret because Purdue got a couple of bad breaks here. You know, two of Illinois' touchdowns came after bad calls by the officials.
Yeah.
The fumble by Xander Horvath, I thought clearly he was down.
Clearly.
The pass interference call on Purdue on that third down.
Yeah.
I don't know what they saw there, but that didn't seem to me like pass interference. Those two plays led to touchdowns. Purdue loses George Karloftis. Obviously, I think you really missed him in the second half. You could have used somebody who could generate some pass rush out of a 3-4 man front, dropping everybody else back into coverage. Purdue did overcome some stuff here, but Purdue also really, really allowed itself to be in that position as well. I thought the defense gave up way too many yards to a bad offense with a 4-string quarterback. Might be part of the growing pains of a new defense. Probably understandable. Probably can write that one off. Gave up way too many first downs by penalty on 3rd and 4th downs too. Just when you had opportunities to get off the field, you just didn't get off the field. And you were just fortunate there at the end. I shouldn't say fortunate because Purdue made the plays, obviously. But Purdue was in a position where, you know, if David Bell doesn't make that 3rd down catch, Illinois is getting the ball back with a lot of momentum. I don't remember how much time exactly they would have had. Enough to do something with, probably.
Sure.
But with all Illinois was up against, losing all those guys to COVID, and Purdue clearly being the better team, I thought, you know, it was the ultimate kind of mixed emotions win where you're happy as hell to have it, but you can look back at it and really want to kick yourself over a bunch of different stuff.
You know, Tom, Jeff Brohm talked post-game. George Karloftis obviously sustained looked to be a knee or ankle injury. Sam Garvin will be out. Even Brohm admitted, he said, for a while. Got carted off. Didn't look good there at all. He got both those guys got rolled up on. You know, that's another tough thing. They really need Karloftis. That's clear to me to really to have that defense be a force of any kind, just because you need that level of pressure and didn't seem to get it any out of the place today.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You always want number five out there. The effort he gives was sorely missed in the second half. And you're right. You know, the defense sprung some leaks today, guys. Like you mentioned, on the fourth string, Illinois quarterback did a good job time and again seemingly finding gaps and seams in that Purdue defense and able to exploit them. But I tell you what, guys, Purdue's defense generated four turnovers, which is big, right? Derek Barnes had a nice pick as well. I talked about the huge hit by Marvin Grant, forced fumble, of course, recovered by Jalen Graham in the end zone for a touchdown, too. So that was a big positive for Purdue today, I think, defensively. What was really getting those turnovers. They continue to play a lot of guys as well. And, Alan, to your point about Sam Garvin, yeah, unfortunately, you know, first series of the game, your starting center goes out. This is two games in a row now Purdue's seen a starting offensive lineman leave because of injury. Of course, Cam Craig got hurt in the opener, didn't play today at all. Spencer Holstage had to take his spot at left guard. Now Garvin's out, like you said, Alan. Sounds like for an extended stretch maybe. But how about Gus Hartwick, fellas? Comes in a true freshman, got his feet wet last week, plays the bulk of this game. And to me, from just a quick first observation, looks like he more than held his own. So I know the offensive line didn't always get a push in some of these short yardage situations, but they played a lot of guys again today. And I know it's a work in progress, but I still think that's a unit that can be awfully productive this year.
You know, Brian, I think part of the formula, if there is such a thing in this COVID college football world, is depth. I mean, you're going to have bodies that are going to be able to play. And we know that Marvin Grant, for example, you know, more than anyone, a very highly recruited guy that's now finally, and that's not a fair thing to say, but he's now seeing the field. And you see some of that talent come to the fore. You know, that's all part of, I think, going to be part of how you know, it's going to be the team that can field the most guys at the most times, I think, to be able to be successful as Purdue tries to do something good in the last six games of the regular season.
It's been pretty, I guess, eye-opening how much Purdue trusts its guys. Like, you're seeing guys who really, you know, we didn't anticipate being in the playing rotation. Like, I looked up after one of those red zone turnovers the defense forced, and Suleiman Paco was out there, and I didn't know he was in the rotation. You know, you look at the play where Illinois is coming out of its own end zone. Hey, there's Marvin Grant's, like, first snap of the season and one of the first snaps of his career because he only played a couple of snaps at Nevada last year. He's out there. They trust these guys to put them in big situations. Kieran Douglas at linebacker has played an awful lot. They have rotated all over the place. They've rotated on the offensive line. They've rotated all over the place on defense. They're just playing a lot of guys, and you don't see a lot of coaches who necessarily always have that faith in their players. Robert McWilliams, Bob McBill, if you will. He's played a ton. And again, another guy who seemed to be outside of the playing rotation, you know, for a while there. He's been out there a lot, and Purdue just is showing real faith in its guys. And, you know, everything I've seen so far, that faith has been relatively rewarded here.
Yeah, and I think that's an important ingredient that you're going to see for teams on down the road here. Aiden O'Connell also, you know, the number's pretty darn good, 29 of 35, 300-plus yards. Really did a lot of good things again. He just seems to have a feel for what's going on. I thought Purdue couldn't throw downfield. I don't know if they couldn't or they didn't throw deep as much. Obviously, the one to Marvin or to
Milton Wright.
Milton Wright, who's really looking good until he got hurt. Anyway, the point is that Aiden O'Connell still is really doing good things.
Yeah, I mean, he only had one incompleted pass in the first half. He started off very well. Alan, you talked about his numbers. How about this number, zero as in interceptions today? Of course, he had a couple picks in the opener. So Aiden's a real humble guy, as you guys know. He's never going to take any credit for himself. But again, I'm always impressed by his calm, cool demeanor in the pocket. Pretty unflappable, and he throws a pretty good ball, too, fellas. And, you know, one offensive guy we haven't talked about yet, this deep end of this discussion, is Xander Horvath. Yeah. And I know he had the two fumbles today, the one on the goal line. Gosh.
One fumble. Better one should have counted.
Yeah, right.
But, again, Horvath, 100 yards rushing, guys. That's three games in a row dating last year. Alan, I saw your tweet during the game. The last Purdue running back to have 100 yards rushing in three or more games.
Three straight.
Three straight, Mike Allstott.
Yeah, same number.
I'm not saying Horvath is Allstott. What I'm trying to say is Horvath is a nice running back, and he's proven to be pretty durable this year in the short season so far. And he may have to be, guys. I'm not sure when King DeRue is going to be back. Of course, he missed his second game in a row. I thought maybe after Horvath fumbled at the goal line that maybe he'd catch some bench time. Nope. He was right back out there. So the coaching staff trust him. You know, Brian, you talked about the trust the staff shows in a lot of his other players. Certainly showed a lot of trust in Horvath by continuing to give him the ball in some critical situations after that second fumble. So, again, another nice game for Horvath, who quietly is racking up these 100-yard games. And it sure is fun watching him play. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, he is. He's giving good effort and did some good things out of the pass game as well. Yep. You know, he's just making stuff happen. And O'Connell seems to be making almost all the right reads. He got bailed out on a sack, but he got whooped on a sack too. I mean, he got hit hard there on that one that he fumbled and Purdue got it back. But again, and I think that's the other thing, Brian, you know, that turnover ratio, you know, how many games in a row did Purdue go without being able to really, you know, not getting fumbles or in past regimes, and then in the fact that they're causing turnovers. You would expect that today against Illinois' compromised four-string quarterback, but that is a good sign that you're starting to make those things happen.
Yeah, one other quick point to make about the running backs. To quote Chris Rock, a man is only as loyal as his options. And, you know, with Xander Horvath, you know, him, putting him back in after the second fumble, you know, your alternative is Dejon Hewitt. We don't necessarily know where he is in his career. You don't have King DeRue. I don't know what Tyreek Murphy's deal is, but I doubt they would have put him in anyway. But you're down a couple running backs. They stuck with him. That's been a good thing, because I think you've also seen Xander Horvath, as games go on, kind of get into the flow of things a little bit, become a little bit more physical, become a little bit more assertive, and that kind of wears people down a little bit. He's done a great job as a receiver, in addition to a runner, and he's just playing really well right now. And he had one fumble today. The other one doesn't count in my mind because it wasn't a fumble. But he's playing really, really well, and he's been a big part of this offense's success. To the turnovers you mentioned before, the defense is forcing. I thought it was important to get pressure on an experienced quarterback, somebody who's maybe a little bit of an outside the pocket sort of guy. That's exactly what they did. And, you know, forced a couple of, I can't remember the one to Derek Barnes, if there was a whole lot of pressure on the quarterback, but the one by Cam Allen deep in its own territory, I think Purdue got a little bit of Jack Sullivan, I think, got in his face and sort of created that. So it was really important to get that pressure. For Purdue to have been able to get that pressure on that play without George Karloftis on the field, obviously, was a very encouraging deal. But you're seeing a pretty aggressive defense here. Last week, I thought they really went after the ball, and I think you saw that today as well. I can't remember how much Purdue actually forced these fumbles today, more so than Illinois just committed them. I think there was a bad handoff at one point. But Purdue's being really aggressive, and if you're going to give up a ton of yards, the way to balance that out is to create turnovers, make big plays, and get red zone stops. And Purdue did all of that today. You wouldn't have liked to have seen so much bending to a bad offense with a four-string quarterback, but this was the ultimate sort of bend but don't break sort of deal. You just don't want to roll the dice. You know, when you allow the game to stay close, you kind of leave it up to chance. You put the burden on your offense to not screw it up, and obviously the offense didn't, but you would have liked to have seen a little, probably fewer yards against this particular opponent, fewer penalties on money downs too.
Are they trying to run you out of the press box? You got to get your mask back on. Okay. Okay. That's all right. We'll let you do that. Tom, speaking of Brian's comment about aggressive, I thought Jeff Brohm at a couple of times, it's easy to say, you know, you decide to throw three straight downs when you have the game in a little bit more in hand. Didn't work out for him. He stayed aggressive down the stretch. That rewarded, you know, he also made the right play, or Aiden O'Connell made the right read on the third and 11 play. But that's just the way Jeff Brohm is. You know, he's gonna do that kind of stuff, and that's kind of what you see is what you get.
Yeah, he called it swinging for the fences, guys. Third and 11, and you know, Boy, they ran a slant before that. They got knocked down. They tried to run the ball. They didn't go anywhere. Then they're in that predicament, guys, where they didn't want to give the ball back to Illinois. And again, he said David Bell said after the game, coach asked him what they thought they should run, and they went with five verticals. And they told Aiden to look for the one-on-one matchup to David Bell. If it was there, take it. Obviously, it was there. Aiden lofted the ball in the air. You know, David said he had his jersey grabbed, his arm grabbed. He had to reach out with his free hand and haul it in, fellas. And funny, after the game, Bell said during the pandemic, he practiced making one-handed catches with the jugs machine. He said maybe 20 or so odd catches a day he'd make with one hand before it became really natural. Of course, you saw that work pay off today with another huge catch.
Yeah, he's a freak of nature, and he's unbelievable. I mean, that's not to gush, but he is. I think anybody watching college football realizes just how good this guy is. He's something else. All right, Brian, obviously a topsy-turvy world by definition. Michigan State goes into Michigan and beats them. Indiana, at least as of this recording, is handing Rutgers, Minnesota loses the second game to last night. What do you make of it? And Purdue may not play next week, which we'll get into briefly here, but what do you make all this? This is just, to me, even though Purdue was not glowing today, Purdue's got as good a chance as anybody in that division if you take Wisconsin potentially out of the mix for a couple of weeks here.
Yeah, I think, I'll say what I said back in June. I think this season's going to be so unconventional that things are going to be as randomized as ever. I think you're seeing the Big Ten sort of flipped upside down in some ways. Minnesota losing to Maryland yesterday. Michigan State losing to Rutgers last week and then beating Michigan.
Yeah, unbelievable.
It's just everything's going to be so random. And that's why a win like this today, really matters for Purdue. Anyone you can get it, hold on to it, love it like your child, and be happy, because this is a weird year. Everybody had a weird offseason. Everybody had a weird start of training camp, then no training camp, then re-up of training camp. It's just going to be totally random. And I think you've seen that so far, not only through the start of this Big Ten season, but, college football as a whole. Look at some of the early upsets there were back when the SEC and Big 12 started playing, too. This isn't just a Big Ten thing. This might be the whole season, too. Keep in mind, it's only week two, okay? Yeah. You already have the Big Ten West Goliath basically – screwed by COVID. We don't know if they're going to play next week. They didn't play this week. Even if they do play the next 3 weeks, they're going to be down really important guys. Their season is probably, really deep sixth. And that's 2020. Just, it's going to be a weird product all year long, but at least it's something. And that's, I think, what everybody should keep in mind here.
Trevor Lawrence obviously out also for Clemson, and they almost get beat by Boston College. But, Tom, you look at this and say, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense as a Saturday night recording that Purdue will play next week, because Barry Alvarez said he would make an announcement Tuesday. They had X number of more cases today at Wisconsin. No matter what happens, they're going to have a short week of practice. And I'm confused at who really gets to make the call here. But I would be surprised that Purdue will get a game in next week. Say you?
I think you're right, Alan. The 7-day pause has been in effect, I think, since Wednesday. But the team could come back and start working out again next Wednesday. And, again, that gives you a few days to work together to prepare for Purdue on November 7th. And I guess I would be really surprised if that game takes place in Madison. Too bad for both parties. It's just that one of those crazy years where Wisconsin season is off to a flying flop, so to speak, after they beat Illinois 45-7, lost the game with Nebraska today. And again, I guess I'll be surprised if they get that game in next week. Who knows? As Brian said 100 times, victory this year comes in just playing these games. And this isn't figure skating. Style points don't count. Just get the win. Crazy things can happen. They will continue to happen. Purdue's 2-0. And like I said, hopefully we're still talking about playing football a month from now. But again, next week's game, guys, my eyes looks like it could be pretty dicey.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, you had one last thing and then we'll close this down, but obviously the Kauffman commitment last night, I know that's basketball, but it pretty much overtook this overtook the site as good as advertised if you're a Purdue fan. But and you well articulated your vision. You've been on top of the story more than anyone else. But now looking at it 24 hours later, it's I think when you put Purdue's basketball lineup on paper and when you put it on a list of what the Boilermakers have, it's really going to be an interesting and fun time here. Not only this year, but maybe down the road.
Yeah, I think Purdue will be a better team this year, but I think next year is the year. I think next year is the year where you can sit here and say, hey, we might have a chance to do something, because you're going to have Eric Hunter, you're going to have Travion Williams, I assume, back for their senior years. You're going to have Sasha Stefanovic back as a veteran. You know, you're going to have Jaden Ivey and Ethan Morton are going to be experienced. You're bringing in two really good, you know, top 35 caliber players in the country, and Caleb First and Trey Kauffman, and you're just building a really nice roster here. And you know, you'll have experience on your side too next year. And I think Purdue's building something really nice here. And I think, you know, Trey Kauffman's a great player. I think he's a potential NBA guy. But one thing I wanted to beat everybody over the head with last night was, this isn't just about getting Trey Kauffman. This is about getting Trey Kauffman and Caleb First. This is just a preeminent, you know, front court recruiting class. Those guys will play really well together. They will make each other better. And on their own, they're both really good. Together, they can be great, if you ask me.
Yeah, both guys, at least, and Trey certainly shows well on his interviews. And we'll look to get him, hopefully, on our shows upcoming. But just look like a really good, both those guys, really good fits for what Matt Painter is trying to do.
Really, really good, substantive people, competitive kids, really, really high caliber people too. And I mean, insofar as I can say that, just kind of being around them on the perimeter and talking to people around them, I feel pretty secure in saying both of these guys are right at a central casting for Purdue's basketball program.
Yeah, that's a good match with the two freshmen that they have this year and the two others that are redshirting. You've got a really good base of solid individuals, a good place to start. So, all right, guys. Tom, you've got safe travels as you leave Champaign. We'll have a lot more on the site tomorrow, Sunday, November 1st, and a busy week. We'll have a lot of analysis from the Purdue's 31-24 win over Illinois. I want to thank also the Purdue Union Club Hotel for sponsoring us. We are grateful for them as well. And guys, I always enjoy it. It's a good way to kind of wind down after a football game to hear what you guys have to say, and always well said. So have a good Saturday night if you're dealing with trick-or-treaters, and Sunday as well, as we go to that daylight savings time comes to an end, or however it works. We've got to push our clocks back an hour, so we'll do that as well. Safe travels all, and we'll look forward to talking to everybody next week as we look ahead to what's next for Purdue football.